there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state. This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Manchester's indie rock and roll station, XS Manchester. The XS Manchester Long Player, an iconic album in full with Jim Salverson. XS Manchester.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to the XS Long Player, another podcast where I get to discuss a classic album with one of the people who made it. Today it is James Walsh from Star Sailor talking about the band's debut album, Love Is Here. What an album this is. I'll be honest with you, until I went back and listened to it, I'd completely forgotten how brilliant it was. Full of heart, emotion and some beautiful songs, as well as some proper big anthems as well. If you need a reminder of this album, you can check out the link in the podcast description. There is a link that will take you to the album, so feel free to pause, listen, come back before you delve into this chat with James Walsh talking about the band's debut, Love Is Here. How you doing, James? It's been a while.
I'm good, yeah, not too bad.
Good to hear it. First off, I've picked Love Is Here for today's XS Long Player, a classic album that I love. It was a toss-up for me between this and Silence Is Easy. In your view, have I made the right choice? Is this the album that you have the most affection for from Star Sailor's back catalogue?
Yeah, I think so. It's a difficult choice because obviously Silence Is Easy is a special record for us as well. But I think every band's debut album, I think more so in the last bands who've come out in the last 20 odd years, the debut album is a real touchstone. Mm. And it's how we discovered our sound, and it means a lot to the public as well, or the fans of the band. So it's I think you've made the right choice. I guess bands prior to that were signed in a much more raw, like you think of the classic example of U2, where they're signed in a much more raw state. And they're able to almost hone their sound and become U2 over the course of albums. Whereas I think bands more recently, it's like they almost want a more finished article. So by the time you get to make a debut album, you're a lot more accomplished and have something to say.
Well, I guess for a lot of bands now, if your debut album doesn't fly, if it doesn't do the numbers, that's it. You're dead. You're gone.
Yeah. And thank God it did. Because there was a lot of pressure at the time.
Well, we'll talk about some of that pressure in a minute. As you say, this is Star Sailor's debut album, so we probably need to start right at the beginnings of the band, back to when you weren't even Star Sailor, when you were called Waterface, and how you became the lead singer of Waterface at the time. It sounds like it was a little bit fortuitous. You replaced the band's lead singer who was taken ill for, I don't know whether it was a gig or whether it was long term, but do you think back to that event and look back on it and see it as a bit of a sliding doors moment almost?
It happened slightly differently in that there was like a college production, and this lad who actually carried on and played guitar with us and backing vocals for a few years, he was singing as part of this college production, and he fell ill and wasn't able to do it. And that's where I stepped in, and where the rest of the band kind of first heard me sing. The bass player had been in a band with this other lad for a few years, but I think Star Sailor or Waterface was kind of a new sort of undertaking, and they decided that they wanted me to front it. So that's how it all kicked off.
Were there any hesitations about stepping into that at the time? Because I mean, I think you were a little bit younger than the other band members, which I guess is kind of nice in one side, because you're going, well, I get to play with the bigger boys. But the other side is that's a difficult thing for someone who's a couple of years younger to go into, I guess.
Yeah, it was quite intimidating in a way. But the lads in the band have always been very supportive and slightly, I hate to say fatherly, more kind of older brotherly towards me. So I think that definitely helped things. And we'd always shared the same kind of bands and different music that we liked. So, and I think there's a certain sort of confidence and bravado that you possess when you're kind of 16, 17 that sort of carries you through. Whereas now I'd probably be more hesitant if someone more experienced wanted me to become involved in a project. I'd be like, oh, am I good enough for this? Whereas at the time you're just like, I'm really good at this and this is what I'm destined to do. So I'll just throw myself headfirst into it.
Isn't it weird? The more experienced you get, the worse imposter syndrome gets. I never thought of that before, but it's 100% the case. Well, in those early days, your vocals really stood out in the band. And I remember, well, I was reading recently an old NME review. I think it was from the days before you were signed when you were gigging. And the words that were used in this review were that the band were blessed with a singer whose voice thrummed like an emotional telegraph wire. I think there is a unique quality to your voice, and it certainly cuts through in terms of its sound and its delivery, but also the kind of emotion that is contained within it. What do you put that down to? Because I was wondering whether, because I know previous to the band you sung in a choir, or you were a choir boy. Do you think that's where it comes from?
Yeah, I think that was something that was seen as quite negative at the time. Like,
okay,
not at the time when the band came out, but when I was actually in a choir, it wasn't a cool thing to do or to be. It's like, you get much more popularity if you're good at football. certainly where I grew up. But it actually kind of stood us in good stead because it gave us a different sort of quality to my vocal than someone who, like so many bands, the lead singers in the bands only start singing because they can't play an instrument. Whereas this was something that I'd always been passionate about and had an ability for. And I think that, that kind of gave us that little bit different to the more swaggering kind of Ian Brown. I think Liam Gallagher's an amazing singer, but what he does is more raw and, something different. So, definitely was part of it.
That NME review that I referred to a minute ago, it kind of hints at the buzz that was spinning around Star Sailor in those early days. And there was a bidding war around which record label was going to get your signature. How did that feel at the time, being in the centre of that? Did it feel exciting? Did it feel pressurised? Were you able to appreciate the attention, or did that just feel a little bit alien to you?
It was very exciting. Looking back on it, it was just ridiculous, really. Just everything seemed to go for us. All the singles that we released did better and better with each one. The first kind of slight disappointment was that the album didn't hit number one, and we were obviously overjoyed that it was a top five record, but slightly disappointed that it hadn't hit number one, which
top
is
top five, platinum selling. I can see why you'd be disappointed.
which obviously, looking back on it, you think that's ridiculous. Like, it's such a small thing. And I think Love Is Here was kept off the top spot by Kylie, and Silence Is Easy was kept off the top spot by The Darkness, or the other way around, I can't remember. It's weird how you kind of, you become comfortable with the world that you're thrust into, and your expectations and your ambitions become increased accordingly, where you think, well, we've done that, so next we've got to do this, we've got to have a number one in America and all these ridiculous things. Don't get me wrong, we enjoyed it a lot of the time, but it's a shame that it almost becomes normal instead of being like, we need to embrace this and really enjoy it, because it's, you kind of think that it's the start of a road rather than, not the end sounds a bit depressing.
I know what you mean, like that you never know when the best moment is or the best time is until
it's gone.
You download the line, and then it might still be around the corner. You just don't know.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we have got is that the album did have an impact, and people still remember it, and we can still go out and play these songs and kind of rekindle some of that energy, and like I say, maybe even appreciate it more than we did at the time it was happening.
Well, I want to talk about that love for the album in a little bit, actually, so we will come back to that. But I want to take you back to the recording of the album, because there wasn't a huge amount of time between the band actually getting together and then you walking in the doors of Rockfield Studios to record this album. A few of the bands I've spoken to on this show have talked about recording at Rockfield Studios, because it's amazing the amount of brilliant albums that have been made in those walls. How did that feel walking into those studios? Was it another thing that you just kind of accepted was happening, or did the kind of magnitude of history, the music history from those legendary studios, kind of impact you? Did you feel the weight of history on your shoulders?
Yeah, I think the latter, really. I think we really felt the pressure and the magnitude of recording somewhere like that. It really helped having Steve Osborne producing the record, because his style of production is he's quite school teacherly. He's quite he brought us down a peg or two. He was very much our boss in that, probably more so than subsequent albums, because it was our first time in a studio like that. And
Were you accepting of that when he was kind of going, no, do it this way, or this is how we're going to do this? Was there any friction there, or was it just a case of, well, this is a guy who's worked with, I don't know, New Order, Manic Street Preachers, whoever else he'd worked with at that stage?
I don't think so. None of us are particularly arrogant or dismissive of other alternative kind of suggestions or ways that we could improve on a vocal or a performance. The only time there would be any friction is if you'd get to the 50th take and in your head it's I've got this, it's done, it sounds great. And he's no, we can get a better one. But it's one of those things where you have to reluctantly admit afterwards that, he was right to kind of push us that bit further. It was good to record in a residential studio away from the hype and the pressures and with a producer that wasn't going to indulge us and make us feel like stars. He was we're here to work and to record the best album we possibly can.
I mean, it was a residential stay, as you said, making some of the album, but I understand at the same time there were a few breaks and you were touring at the same time as writing new music. So there was new songs creeping into your live sets as you played them. So one night you'd kind of debut a song, next night you'd debut one. Were you using that as a barometer of what might go on the album at the time? Was it kind of a case of playing something and going, oh, the crowd liked that, maybe that should be track number three or whatever it was? Or were you able to compartmentalise what you saw as your album, your kind of project, the story you were telling there, and what was working well in front of an audience?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think it definitely influences what becomes a single, what goes down particularly well with the crowd. The judgment or whatever of the songs and what goes on the album and what doesn't. We were quite confident in our sound, and it was the sound that was getting us the press and the overall feel of the band and the sound. So we decided between ourselves kind of what within that, sorry, I'm rambling a bit now, but within that, what were the better moments of songwriting that needed to be heard. Whereas I think at the time, the crowd were happy with, it's a bit insulting to say anything that we would do, but anything that met a certain quality and illustrated what the band represented, then that would have gone down reasonably well with the crowd. They were very much, it's weird to think back. It's those people were fans. They were people who looked up to us and gave us these incredible reactions. Whereas I feel like the older you get, the more your kind of fans, in inverted commas, want to feel more like your mates almost. Mm. You get more heckles at gigs and people coming up and going, are you coming out for a pint afterwards? Whereas
it's pure adulation in the early days.
Yeah. When you're a younger band, there's a kind of a distance and people look up to you in a way.
Yeah.
But I guess you don't really want that when you're older. It's quite nice that people watching music feel an affinity with bands and think, well, that's someone just like me who happens to sing in a band rather than that's someone special.
I think it's slightly different in terms of what has happened over the last 20 years as well, in terms of how close people feel to musicians or artists or actors in terms of the access via social media. Because I think people do feel like your mates now. They don't necessarily feel like these unobtainable stars that have been put on a pedestal. It's a little bit of a different situation, I guess. I'd like to go back to talking about your voice and the emotion in your voice, because you're right, it's more polished than raw, but I think the feeling comes across so much in it. But not just in the singing as well, also in the songwriting. And, I mean, I don't know where the inspiration behind your songs come from, but it feels like, listening to them, it could be almost like a painful experience to lay this stuff down on the page. And it feels like there might have been things when you were creating this album. Well, I don't know whether it was painful to get those things out or whether you just felt like you needed to get them out.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to explain, but there was a lot of teenage angst in there. And I felt like a bit of an outcast growing up and going to school and discovering girls and discovering that most of them didn't like me. It's weird. It's one of those things, like when you look back on it, you think, oh, that's ridiculous. Given the things that you, the pressures and the things that adult life brings, you think the things I wrote about then were quite trivial. But at the time, it really does affect you deeply to feel kind of lonely or to feel rejected, even if it's more in yourself, like you're processing a situation that maybe to other people isn't that big a deal. It's like something you've dwelt on and built up to something bigger than maybe it is. It's still kind of difficult experiences, and everyone goes through them to a greater or lesser extent. Yeah, that, I think that was a big part of the record and how the lyrics were allowed to be so deep and emotional, because I think I was at an age where it was like no holds barred, really.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think this is a song about a girl that I probably won't remember in 3 months' time, so I'd better hold back. Just think, this is affecting me now. This is how I feel now. So I'm just going to throw it out on the page.
When you listen back to those songs now, or listen to the album now, or replay those songs, do you get taken back to those moments? Do you remember those people?
A little bit, occasionally. But I think a lot of them kind of belong to the crowd. It's like a cliche that a lot of bands say, but we belong to the crowd, and they mean what the people listening to them have told me they mean to them, and they get from them. Especially a song like Alcoholic. The lyrics were written by me much more as a kind of observer and an imagined scenario based on things that I'd picked up just from living in Chorley and spending time in Warrington. But obviously that song's become a deeply personal song to a lot of people. And I'm glad that I wrote it and people interpreted it like that and were able to relate to it.
I'm going to pick a couple of tunes off the album that I want to talk about. I'm hoping in a moment you'll pick a couple of tunes as well that you want to pull moments from or things that spark off memories. But there's a couple I just wanted to shed some light on before we do that. The first one is the album opening, which is Tie Up My Hands, which I've got to confess, it wasn't until I went back and listened to this album again that I'd kind of forgotten how it started. And it's a slightly unusual start to an album. It's almost got a Middle Eastern feel to it, that song. And normally for an album, the first song, the first thing you hear, kind of sets the scene as to how the rest of the album pans out. So what was your thinking behind having Tie Up My Hands as the opening track on Love Is Here?
I think because it starts so slowly. It was obviously a bit of a brave move, like you say, in an era when albums would just kick off with the biggest songs. Yeah. But we wanted to kind of ease people in gently with this. I remember writing the acoustic riff that underpins the song. It works well as a set opener as well. It's just a song that kind of builds and builds and sets the tone for the, not so much when the song starts, but when it finishes, it sets the tone for the rest of the album.
The other track I wanted to talk about was Good Souls. Now, I read an interview of you talking about this where you said that this track was an attempt by you to write a song that the likes of Primal Scream would play. So listening back to Good Souls now, do you think that's the case? Do you think you achieved your goal?
I don't know. I don't think it would sound out of place in a Primal Scream set. but I wouldn't like to say that they would play it because they've got far too many amazing songs of their own. But yeah, it's definitely a song that we're really proud of. It's a song that we'd kind of put in the face of anyone who said, oh, Star Sailor are very miserable and downbeat and write all these painful songs. It's like, it's quite an anthemic song with there's a bit of darkness in there, but it's largely a positive message.
Right, it's your turn now, James. Pick me a couple of tunes off this album that, like I say, spark off memories or just are songs that you love because of their songwriting, or maybe a tracks that you've heard and gone, well, I like that song, but listening back to it with 20 years experience, I wish we'd done this differently. Whatever it is, what tracks do you want to pick?
Lullaby is a big one for me because I remember sitting on my bed in my mum and dad's house in Chorley and kind of starting this song. I think at the time we only really had Good Souls, and Lullaby was one that kind of caught people's ear and caught people's attention and was the second kind of really good song that we added to our canon. Just distinctly sitting on a bed, kind of all the old cliches like dreaming of being in a band and writing this song. There's a headline in a magazine that was The Quiet American, and the first line is, "Get back on your feet again. You're so insincere. The Quiet American, I held you so dear." So yeah, it's a special song, and it still goes down really well when we play it.
It's interesting to hear you say that it was the second good song that you had, second really good song. Is it that instinctive that when you write something that you know is of a certain quality, you just go, yeah, that's it, nailed it?
I think at the time we probably thought all our songs were great. But we sort of put a few songs on a demo and it suddenly got more attention and more praise and whatever than the previous demos that we'd put out, even ones with good souls on. It took us a while to, even in its raw sort of demo form, to get like a definitive version of Good Souls that caught people's ear. And the other song I'm going to pick is, oh,
I'm on tenterhooks.
Yeah. Fever.
Okay. Why that one?
I think listening to artists like Hozier now, I think of all our songs, that's one that still sounds quite fresh and contemporary because it's so retro in a roundabout way. I could really imagine him singing that. The instrumentation is so simple as well, but so effective. Like Barry's Wurlitzer is amazing on that track, and the drums and the bass are so understated. Just really proud of the songwriting. It's quite an angry song as well. It's like, I'm over you and I'm going to go on, like prove myself and do something with my life kind of thing.
James, it's been a pleasure to go back over and remember Love Is Here as an album. It's 20 years since it was released now. And I know you've been kind of celebrating its release a little bit over the last few months. You did an acoustic set. You personally did the whole album as a kind of benefit gig for the NHS. Depending when you're listening to this as a show, as a podcast, we're at hopefully what is the tail end of the COVID pandemic as well. And you wanted to recognise the workers of the NHS, so you did the gig for them. Then as a band, you played a few gigs with the whole album as well, going through it track by track. When you went back to it, two decades on from its release, I mean, I guess you've kind of not turned your back on these songs completely over those two decades. But did it feel like a bit of a rediscovery? Did it open up those feelings again? Did it take you back to when you were recording these songs, and how did you feel about them with that benefit of time?
Really proud and really, really good about the songs. I think there's always a period in the immediate aftermath of an album, even something that's gone well, where you maybe listen too intently to the negative voices and think you've got something to prove to them. So then you start, like Silence Is Easy is a bit of a reaction to Love Is Here and a kind of conscious effort to prove that we could do something different. Mm. But then as you say, like as time passes, you grow more affectionate for what you've done in the past and appreciate kind of what it's done for you and what it means to people. So yeah, like we have been playing Good Souls, Alcoholic, Poor Misguided Fool for the last sort of 20 years. Mm. But it's been nice to revisit songs like Talk Her Down, Coming Down, She Just Wept. You always revisit songs that you've not done for a while with a bit of trepidation, like, are they any good? but thankfully they've really sort of, they've stood the test of time as much as the more popular ones.
You mentioned right at the beginning when we started talking how important it is to you, the love that people have for these albums. Those gigs I just mentioned when you revisited Love Is Here, they sold out super quick, all the tickets went, the venues were packed and all that kind of thing. But often at the same time, you hear bands, particularly who are still making music and you're still writing your own music, you're still writing albums, they kind of like, not resent, I don't think resent's the right word, but certainly want to move away from their music of the past and just focus on the music of the future. But is it the kind of the love that people have for this album and Silence Is Easy that makes you want to revisit it, that stops you kind of almost turning your back on it?
Yeah, and I think it's a double-edged sword as well, because, or maybe a double-edged sword's the wrong expression, but it's one of those things where a yin and yang or whatever, it's one of those things where obviously there are times where I think, oh, I wish more people would come on board with the new stuff I'm doing or the solo stuff I'm doing. But I wouldn't have a lot of that audience without Love Is Here and without the Star Sailor audience. So I can't, you almost kind of can't have it both ways. So yeah, there's a lot to be thankful for that record came out and had such an impact. And there are times where I'm a bit moody about, like I say, more people coming come in from that, who got into that record, to what the band's done more recently as well as what I've done solo. But most of the time, yeah, it's like, well, at least a lot of those people have stuck with us enough to have given us a career for the last 20 years.
Mm. Where can people find all that new stuff? Because there's some stunning records that have been produced in the interim from yourself as a solo artist, and you say the band's stuff as well, the newest stuff that they've done. Where can people find all that?
I've got a Bandcamp. It's like James Walsh Official Bandcamp.com. The Star Sailor albums are on all the usual streaming platforms. James Walsh Music on Instagram and James Star Sailor on Twitter.
There you go. So, you're everywhere. You're omnipresent. It's good to hear.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it a big advert for everything. But yeah, I think it's Star Sailor Band on Twitter as well, if you want to keep up with what the band's doing.
I'll put the links in the description of the podcast as well, so people can go and find whatever they want to find there. Before I let you go, I mean, Star Sailor are often credited with being a Wigan band. I know not all of you have your roots in Wigan. You're from various parts around the Northwest. But I wanted to ask you about the music scene in Wigan at the moment, because in terms of Greater Manchester, it certainly seems to be the place where there is a buzz at the moment. And that's led by the Lathams. But there's a whole load of really good up-and-coming bands in their wake at the moment coming out of Wigan. What do you put it down to? What is there, something in the water? Why is there such a kind of buzz around music up there at the moment?
I don't know. It obviously started with The Verve. They kind of paved the way and gave a lot of Wigan bands or bands from that part of the world someone and something to look up to. It's probably being slightly removed from Manchester as well, which is more renowned for sort of swaggering bands like Oasis and the Happy Mondays. I think the Lathams are a great example where there's a sort of modesty to them and an effortless charm, which I think is quite unique to smaller towns, where if you walk into a pub in Wigan and you're too up yourself or swaggering and confident, they'd probably tell you to get out again.
So yeah, in those terms,
so I guess there's the lottery winners as well. They're a good example of a band who are using kind of a much more positive and almost humour-filled way of putting themselves across, which works really well. And yeah, the Lathams have got some amazing songs and just seem like nice lads who can't believe their luck.
James, pleasure to talk to you about music, and particularly to talk to you about what is 100% a classic album, Star Sailor's debut, Love Is Here. So really appreciate your time on the XS Long Player.
Cheers. Sorry about the truck that just turned up outside.
It's all part of the magic.
All right. Nice one. Thanks.
Nice one. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
XS Manchester Long Player, an iconic album in full with Jim Salverson. XS Manchester.
Cheers to your ears. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. It was a good one, wasn't it? James Walsh, what a lovely bloke. You can find all the details that I mentioned in the conversation about his new stuff, where to find his new tunes and his Bandcamp link and whatnot, in the podcast description. Go and click that, because there is a load of great stuff that James has done over the last couple of years that you may not have heard before, so go and check it out. If you enjoyed today's podcast, you can find me on Twitter at Mr_JimBob. Let me know what albums you want me to cover in the future, or you can just mention the album that you'd like me to cover and who you'd like me to talk to as you leave a review, which I'm sure you're going to go and do, right? Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars, let me know what you think, and if you've got suggestions about future albums, feel free to make them there as well. There'll be a new one next week, so I'll see you pretty soon for another XS Long Player.
Manchester's indie rock and roll station, XS Manchester.